Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, attaining the supreme, text number 9. Kavim Vrana Manushasitaram. Anoraniyam Sam Anusmaradyaha. Savasidataram Achintya Rupam. Aditya Varnam Tamasa Parastat. Kavim,
Kavim,
the one who knows everything.
The one who knows everything.
Puranam,
Puranam,
the oldest.
The oldest.
Anushasitaram,
Anushasitaram,
the controller.
The controller.
Ano, then the Adam. Aniyam Sam, smaller. Anusmared,
always thinks of.
Ya, one who. Savasya, of everything. Dattaram, the maintainer. Achintya,
inconceivable.
Rupam, whose form. Aditya Varnam,
luminous like the sun.
Tamasa,
to darkness.
Parastat,
transcendental.
Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as He was the oldest, who was the controller, was small in the smallest, was the maintainer of everything, was beyond all material conception, was inconceivable, and was always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and he is transcendental beyond this material nature. Purport. Process of thinking of the Supreme is mentioned in this verse. Foremost point is that he is not impersonal or void. One cannot meditate upon something impersonal or void. That is very difficult. The process of thinking of Krishna, however, is very easy, as actually stated herein. First of all, the Lord is Purusha, a person. We think of the person Rama and the person Krishna. And whether one thinks of Rama or of Krishna, what he is like is described in this verse of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord is Kavi. That is, he knows past, present, future, and he knows everything. He is the oldest personality because he's the origin of everything, and everything is born out of him. He's also the supreme controller of the universe, and he is the maintainer and structure of humanity. He's smaller than the smallest. The living entity is 1/10,000th part of the tip of a hair, but the Lord is so inconceivably small that he enters into the heart of this particle. Therefore, he is called smaller than the smallest. As the Supreme, he can enter into the atom and into the heart of the smallest and control him as the Supersoul. Although so small, he is still all-pervading. And he is maintaining everything. By him, all these planetary systems are sustained. We often wonder how these big planets are floating in the air. It is stated here that the Supreme Lord, by his inconceivable energy, is sustaining all these big planets and the systems of galaxies. The word achintya, inconceivable, is very significant in this connection. God's energy is beyond our conception, beyond our thinking jurisdiction, and is therefore called inconceivable, achintya. Who can argue this point? He pervades this material world and yet is beyond it. We cannot comprehend even this material world, which is an insignificant compared to the spiritual world. So how can we compare what is beyond? Achintya means that which is beyond this material world, that which our argument, logic, and philosophical speculations cannot touch, that which is inconceivable. Therefore, intelligent persons, avoiding useless arguments and speculation, should accept what is stated in scriptures like the Vedas, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Follow the principles they set down. This will lead one to understanding. Kavin Puranam Rushasitaram Anu Anoraniyam Samanusmarajaha Savasya Dattaramiti Rupam Adityavarnam Tamasaparastat. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is small and the smallest, the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and he is transcendental beyond this material nature. This chapter is called Attaining the Supreme. So we find out we attain the Supreme by thinking about the Supreme. And this verse explains how we should think about the Supreme. The example is given that a certain insect called the Bringi insect captures another insect and puts it into a hole and seals the hole. So that insect that's in the hole is not very happy about being in the hole, and therefore he's always thinking about the Bringi insect that put him into the hole. And therefore in his next life he becomes a Bringi insect, because that's what he's thinking about. So whatever we think of, this chapter has told us, whatever we think about at the time of death, then we'll attain that state. It recommends we think about Krishna, but here it begins to tell us how we should think about Krishna. And it begins, Prabhupada said, we think of Krishna as a person. Otherwise, the tendency is to think, oh, Krishna is all-pervading, he's the force. He's like the force. Or we think that, oh, Krishna is luminous, he's like the sun. He's luminous, maybe he's just a ball of fire or something. Big ball of fire. Therefore, to actually think of Krishna as a person, that we're a person because Krishna is a person, not the other way around. That because we're a person, we think that God must be a person. But because God's a person, therefore we're persons. And this gives us an opportunity to direct our thinking in a way that we can appreciate Krishna. But without seeing these things in relation to a person, then we're very much likely to become impersonalist. Krishna knows everything. Then we think, oh, Krishna knows everything. He must be a big, big brain. So we see a big, big brain. We think, oh, knowing everything, he must really get a headache. Think of all these different things that are going on. He must be really distressed. Seeing all these people suffering. He knows all about their suffering, past, present, future. It is said that it's good that we don't remember our past lives, because if we did, we'd remember all the suffering we went through. But Krishna remembers all our past lives, all the suffering we went through. So what kind of state of consciousness must he be in? We do something bad, we're trying to forget it, but Krishna can't forget it. So how many times did we curse Krishna? He remembers it all. Does that mean when he looks at us, wow, one day I'm going to get even. I know all these things that you did against me since time immemorial. The day will come. No, we can't conceive about Krishna. Yeah, he's a person and he's a supreme person. But he's completely aloof, as it says here. He has nothing to do with the material nature. For him, it's like a dream. For us, it's a dream also. But Krishna knows that the soul is really doing nothing, nor is he entangled. And even all the good and bad things we're doing, they're all being created by Krishna. The soul can't do anything. It's not the soul snaps his finger and the universe comes into being. Our body comes into being. Soul is simply being directed by Krishna's energies, being placed in a certain body, created by the material nature. And the material nature is acting subtly and grossly by giving us so much remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness under Krishna's direction. And even if we come into the spiritual energy, that spiritual energy is giving us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. But until we become liberated, we're more or less in the external energy, all created by Krishna. The whole drama that's going on is all created by Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is not very much attached to all our dreams. Like if last night I told you that in my dream I came and I killed you, your dream, you would take it very seriously. Because we don't take dreams that seriously. Like someone says, last night Krishna came to me and told me that I should become the Acharya. And our reaction is, yes, last night Krishna also came to me and told me that he would come to you and tell you that you're supposed to become the Acharya. But he told me to tell you that actually you're a fool number one to believe him. But these things we don't take seriously. But what is taken seriously is that what you think about Krishna. And therefore Krishna is presenting in a way that preliminarily there's a little bit of awe and reverence. Because otherwise people like to think about Krishna and his pastimes and the internal energy, and they think they're thinking about Krishna. And they are to some extent. But unless the depth of our reverence is there at first, what we're just thinking is our imagination, which is not bad, but we may not actually enter very deeply into thinking about Krishna just by thinking about Krishna on a very superficial level. Because that Krishna who's playing as a coward boy in Vrindavan is not an ordinary coward boy. He's creating and maintaining innumerable universes, material and spiritual. And therefore the depth of emotion and experience and feeling that the residents have of Vrindavan, we cannot even begin to comprehend. And therefore, without that experience of that depth of emotions that they're experiencing, we don't really know what's going on in these pastimes. It's not that Krishna gets up in the morning and he herds the cows, and it's the same old cows. They give the same old milk, whatever. They may, there's probably even nothing new. They probably don't even have ice cream there. They don't even know that. It's the same old thing every day. It never gets bored. So we don't know what it's all about. But here, in this world that we have an opportunity to try to meet Krishna and remember him in our everyday life, and then Krishna will become real to us. It's just like if you go on Sankirtan and you believe that Krishna is the controller, and if you pray to him, he'll send someone to take a book. And lo and behold, if you pray to him, someone comes and takes a book. And you believe that Krishna is actually the controller. But if you never have the opportunity to try to do something that's in Krishna's service, by which you can find out if Krishna is the controller or not. If the only way you can find out if Krishna is in control, you pray for an extra glubdhaman or something. And if you get it, then you believe he's in control. And if he doesn't give you the glubdhaman, then you think, oh, useless. Couldn't be the controller. He didn't give me what I wanted. But if we try to give Krishna what he wants, we pray to Krishna for what he wants, then the result is that he's much more likely to reciprocate with us, and therefore we'll be able to perceive how he's the controller, how he's part of this material world, he's part of our existence, and that way we'll actually remember him. But of course, just hearing how he's in every atom, he's everywhere, he's the sun, he's Kavin, he knows everything. This is only practical to understand by devotional service, specifically devotional service which aims at fulfilling Krishna's mission. And then we can see how Krishna arranges our lives in order to help us fulfill his mission. But if we don't do that, then the result is that we won't have the, Krishna won't have the opportunity to actually reveal himself to us in our practical everyday lives. And therefore we'll always be doubtful whether actually Krishna is in control. Or maybe the Illuminati is in control or something. So I'll stop there. Any questions? When you answer questions, everything goes so silent. Even the birds stop chirping. They start wondering, good question. Yes. At least she got an answer for your question. You can ask me after the class.
After the class?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Grand Raj Shaman Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.